Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on Thursday, the 24th of September, 2020, bringing Southern Arizonans together right here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me in studio, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Contributor on Agriculture. Professor Silvertooth has been with the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences since 1987. He's currently the Associate Dean and Director for Extension and Economic Development, where he provides overall leadership and administrative and personnel management for the Arizona Cooperative Extension. He also serves as the Associate Director for the Arizona Experimental Station. Jeff, it's great to have you back in studio with us.
It's good to be here, Bill. Thank you.
A lot to talk about today. We're really in this kind of, I call it the endless summer. This is a summer. I've been in town 32 years. You've been here pretty much as long or longer. I've never known a summer drier or hotter. And I think, Jeff, the worry is that somehow this might be a new norm. We had talked for years, Jeff, about what would happen if the summer rains really never materialized. Right. This was one of those summers.
It has been.
Yeah.
It has. You know, just like you say, in the 34 seasons I've been here, Bill, this is unprecedented. As a matter of fact, we are breaking records. I was
just reading
the National Weather Service forecast and the synopsis for this week, yesterday. And it is. We're about 10 degrees above normal. It's a summer that won't let go. It's been a record of high pressure all summer long. And all of us are hoping and praying that this thing breaks pretty soon. But I think you're right. I think we very well may be moving into a new normal.
And these are questions now about how will this impact the agriculture industry in Arizona? There will be changes. It's just a matter of how we're going to approach those changes.
That's absolutely correct. Here's an interesting part, Bill. Most of the time for summer crops, when we have a dry summer, and as long as we have adequate water for irrigation in Arizona, we experience record crops. And so I've been limited here lately because of all this, you know, change in our business with the COVID pandemic and the way we've had to do business and things going on at the university. I've been limited in my capacity to get out in the state, but I have been getting out some. And my travels out, of course, I go right straight into the crop production fields, first opportunity I have. And with summer crops, the yields and the quality of the crops are looking great.
Are they really?
Yeah.
The conventional wisdom would be, after this kind of summer, I would expect you to have said it was looking really bad out there in the
fields. Well, you know, if you're limited on water,
yeah,
that's where the problem is.
Okay.
If somebody might be stretched out with, they might have an acreage that has a limited amount of water associated with it. Of course, water demand was up this year for maintaining the crops. The crops can actually cool themselves relatively well through a warm season crop if they have adequate water. You know, they transpire just like evaporative coolers do. A lot of us live in this kind of a climate with evaporative air conditioners, evaporative coolers, swamp coolers. That's basically what a plant does. That's why they use water in the summer. Some people call them water-sucking crops. Well, it's just the atmospheric demand in the summer to grow a summer crop. If you want to grow something in the summer out here, you've got to put the water through it. And these crops are responding admirably. And so I was just in some chili fields the past couple of weeks in southeast Arizona, cotton fields in central and southern Arizona. They're beautiful crops in general. It's a generalization. But that's where the relationship is. They're going to do well with this kind of weather if they have adequate irrigation. And the same thing is true with our plants at home.
And the CAP does guarantee agriculture water.
It does. But therein lies the problem.
Okay.
Because the climate, as this climate changes, and as we've had reduced precipitation in the entire Southwest, our reservoirs, such as Lake Mead, have been going down. And without that kind of replenishment that we need, that we normally need to keep them, you know, adequately filled to maintain our demands for agriculture, urban, and municipal industrial purposes, That's where the problem lies. And agriculture is going to be the first one to take the hit when those water shortages are coming down. Matter of fact, that's happening this next year. There's going to be about a 40% decrease in available water from the CAP into central Arizona. Those irrigation districts are trying to adjust for that right now with expansion or a refurbishing of their groundwater wells.
Jeff Silvertooth, when you say summer crops, what are we talking about?
Warm season crops. Primarily, you would start with the melons, cantaloupes, watermelons, honeydews.
Grown where?
Those are grown in central and southwestern Arizona, principally in the Yuma, Lower Colorado River Valley, but sometimes often in central Arizona there as well. Mm-hmm. Then we're talking, of course, about cotton, corn, beans, chilies, alfalfa. Crops like that would be warm season crops that we grow principally through from the spring, as we would say, the spring into the fall and into the winter.
I want to talk a little bit about this. It was a front page piece, I think, a Sunday or two ago in the Arizona Daily Star. A team of scientists, many of them from the University of Arizona, are looking at what they call a new blueprint for arid land agriculture using primarily wild native crops and modern growing technologies. They contend that the southwestern farm staples that are most threatened by global warming would be, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, Jeff, corn, dry beans, melons, chilies, which you just referred to, and most vegetables.
Right. Well, I'm actually familiar with that work. I do differ in that general assessment. These crops can do well with the changing climate. What will happen is our windows for production will shift. Our way we can plant them earlier, we can hold them later. It's really actually more conducive to some crops that have more what we call perennial growth habits. And chilies would be one of those. Cotton would be another. Corn and plants, crops like that, and beans are annuals. So we plant them, they grow up, they have a determinate, we call determinate growth. They grow up, they set a fruit load of beans, the corn, ears, et cetera, they mature, die. But so what we have to do in these changing climate conditions is shift our planting dates so that we move those plants into more optimum windows with regard to temperature regimes. But the bottom line for us always comes back to water. As long as we have adequate water, we can maintain these crops and we can maintain production. In fact, in Arizona, we enjoy the highest yields and some of the highest qualities of crops, of those same crops in the world. And in relation to what they're saying, too, in terms of adjusting crop production patterns in the future in response to climate change. I think one of the things you're seeing happening there too, Bill, is people are becoming more aware of the fact that we do have limitations with regard to our crop production, and that's good. That's good, and may have to recognize that there are limitations with regard to access, availability, and also to water direction. And so we're all competing for water. We recognize it's a precious resource in the desert. It's the lifeblood of the desert. And if we're going to keep water for ourselves, we have to say, well, there is some amount of this water we need for crop production. The question is how much and how are we going to direct it? But it's this better understanding of the public, I think, is a positive feature from those kinds of discussions.
These researchers are also talking about the change in a consumer palate, the tastes of consumers. Will the consumer switch over to wild, locally grown foods that might not have been considered something that they would do before?
Some will. Mm-hmm. Some will. The question we run into is like, well, how
foods
many?
Foods like what? I mean, well, what are we talking about with wild-grown foods?
Well, a lot of times, I'm not sure what they're, that's a generalization, what they're talking about. What I often hear in these conversations are things like the wild beans, wild corn. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting point right there. Sometimes folks will say we need to go back to some of these older lines.
Right,
what we call ancestral or antique
heritage
lines, exactly.
Lines.
But you know,
heirloom
varieties, exactly. Thank you. But you know, human beings have been selecting and growing crops for 10,000-12,000 years now. And if we go back to the old lines, we're going to go way back. And so even if you go back 100 years from ago, you're dealing with improved varieties, improved lines from the original native sources to a huge extent. So, you know, what people are oftentimes looking for with these kind of changing in the palates is basically just that. It's kind of expanding out, you know, what people like. I mean, there's people that also are encouraging us to eat more mushrooms, even insects and things like that, you know, so that change, that takes a change in palate, and some people will adapt to that. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when you're looking at the general public, there's some limitations to how fast that can happen.
790-2040 for questions for Jeff Silvertooth. Jeff would be happy to entertain any of your questions, or we'd love to hear from your thoughts as well. We'll take our break right here. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back with Jeff Silvertooth.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're talking agriculture with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, professor at the University of Arizona in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Jeff has been there since 1987. And if you missed the first portion of the program, Jeff said that he has been out and about, and some of the summer crops are actually doing surprisingly well. And of course, Jeff, that goes against the traditional thinking that if we're having a very bad monsoon, which we have, hardly any summer rains, you would think that the crop production would be hurting. But we were talking during the break that we're talking kind of different way the water hits the crops.
Right. You know, several things that happen. Actually, one of the ironies that kind of surrounds desert agriculture is that rain is usually cause more problems than good. But actually, overall, it's good because it replenishes water supplies. But direct impact on the crop, there are several things that will happen. First of all, as we irrigate any crop, it's the same thing at our homes with our garden vegetables or our horticultural plants, as we irrigate, salts will evaporate and be deposited on the surface of the soil as the water evaporates and comes up out of the soil. So there'll be a natural increase of salinity right at the soil surface. You might not see it, but it's there. And when it rains, it leaches those salts. They're soluble. It leaches them right back into the root zone, so you can have a salt effect on those plants from a rain. Secondly, a lot of times you have increased humidity from these rains, and their plants are more susceptible to diseases. There's chili crops, for example, are susceptible to Phytophthora and several other real damaging diseases. This time of year, we're always concerned about Phytophthora in crops like chilies. Just out in the chili fields the past few weeks, and amazingly clean with regard to Phytophthora. A few spots here and there, and mostly under sprinkler irrigation. But when we have drip irrigation, they're well irrigated, beautiful chili crops, almost free of Phytophthora this year.
New Mexico likes to boast that, I think the state motto is, do you want green or red chilies? And of course, Hatch has become the moniker attached to Hatch is the chili capital of the world. Do we do some good chilies here in Arizona?
We sure do, as a matter of fact. In southeast Arizona, Cochise County specifically, we have some chili production still that resides there. That's where the chili belt exists, Bill. Really goes from southeast Arizona all the way into far west Texas, of course, all the way across southern New Mexico and into northern Chihuahua. And that's about a range from 3,500 to 4,500 feet elevation. And that's really the key for a good quality chili with good irrigation in this dry desert climate. But the chilies that come out of Hatch, we commonly think of these green chilies, the wonderful Hatch chilies. Mm-hmm. Right now, about 95%, I think it's over 90, about 95% of the seed that produces those varieties of that excellent green chili come out of Cochise County, Arizona.
So most of them are coming,
the
vast majority from Arizona.
The seed and the genetics are developed down here in southeast Arizona by a good friend and colleague of mine, Mr. Ed Curry, who's a farmer. He also runs a seed company. They do the plant breeding, and they actually develop these varieties, beautiful chili varieties that are used commercially throughout southern New Mexico. And so when we go to Hatch, New Mexico, we buy these beautiful chilies. Unless you're buying the old heirloom varieties like Sandias and Big Jims and Jim Parkers, you're getting these new genetic materials that are coming right out of southeast Arizona.
I want to get an update from you. We've talked in the past about hemp production, and a year or so ago you said that time would tell whether hemp production in Arizona was going to make it after we had gone through a summer. What are you hearing?
It's kind of evening out. There's a lot of the crop that had to be rejected last year because of little high THC values, and those crops will be rejected if the THC values exceed the thresholds. So that was a problem last year. Also, too, just basically having the market and the economics, working out basic agronomics. There's some folks in Yuma right now, Dr. Bindu Pudel, who's a plant pathologist, is working with Robert Masson, who's a ag agent for us with Cooperative Extension. They're running some variety tests and basic agronomic studies. They're doing a good job, but they're laying things out. Growers that are staying in the market, staying in the business, are watching those basics right now and trying to fine-tune the industry. Last year was a first run out of the gates. And when you see that happening, just right off the bat, there's bound to be some problems. There were. So I think it's stabilizing a little bit, but a lot of it, almost all of it will be dependent on the market and how well that market can be able to sustain the cost of production it has for a crop like that. That's always the key. We can grow about anything you want out here in Arizona, plant crop-wise. The question is always, do we have a market to make a living doing it?
And do you have the water for it?
And do you have the water? Yeah, exactly.
Always. And I'm not going to ask you to take a position on the proposition that will be before voters concerning marijuana. But I am curious, Jeff Silvertooth, about if that were to pass the recreational marijuana measure on the ballot, would the marijuana be grown in the state of Arizona?
Usually there's two parts to that.
Like how did that work like in Colorado where they went?
Sure about the details of the laws in Colorado, but I know the most states are poised to have two parts to their cannabis or their marijuana laws. One is in use and your recreational use. The other part is in growing and production. For example, right now the way the laws stand in Arizona, You can grow industrial hemp, but it's not medicinal marijuana. It can be extracted for CBD, perhaps, but it's not. It's mostly for industrial, particularly fiber production.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we have licenses that can be obtained by any citizen in Arizona for the use and purchase of marijuana, medical marijuana,
right,
today.
Right.
But then you have to have a separate permit, a separate license to grow and produce. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, I would think, I haven't looked at the details mm-hmm. in this bill, but the idea would be to have, I think, have the expanded capacity for the recreational use. And then I would also think there would probably be concomitant with that an expansion in the capacity for producers in Arizona to grow the crop to provide that, to supply that market. If that were to happen, you know, there's a lot of potential here in Arizona for that. We've shown we can grow it's the same species,
mm-hmm.
the industrial hemp. It's just different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've shown that they can grow it here in Arizona successfully. And again, that's just a change or an opportunity for a changing or expanding market if it went into the medicinal or recreational marijuana route.
When it does cool off, we'll be going into the fall and winter crops, which are traditionally...
Winter crops for central Arizona would be like the grain crops. We grow mm-hmm. we grow a grain crop. We plant them usually around Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
wheat, barley, and we harvest them in usually May or June. But the big winter crops are the winter vegetable crops. Those crops are principally planted in central and mostly in southwestern Arizona, the lower Colorado River Valley. And those would be like your leafy green vegetables, all the lettuces, broccoli, cauliflower, spinach, et cetera.
And the lettuce issue that we had with the disease, and we had the contamination with our lettuce crop from the Yuma Valley area, has that been worked out?
Well, it was E. coli.
I believe that was last winter.
That's been
winter,
it's
right?
been a couple.
Or is it
we've had
couple
little
of years?
We've had little spots every.
I've lost track of time.
We had a big one about 2 years
this
ago.
This COVID thing.
Yeah, we had a big one 2 years ago. There's been similar problems in the Salinas Valley, which is the same industry
mm-hmm.
up in California. But has it been worked out? You're never done with that. I mean, there could be a recontamination anytime. However, our scientists and producers are doing a great job of tracking it. Where can this possibly occur? What are the causes that bring this E. coli into these fields? I mean, they're spending a lot of money monitoring fields, putting up precautions for food safety. I mean, huge amounts of production costs have been added to the production of these crops. But I think the safety parameters have been improved. But the scientists that I work with, just visiting with them just last week, are saying this: the concerns are still there. You have to maintain vigilance all the time, and so monitoring and looking for these potential sources of contamination are critical. They're making improvements on that, but we've got to watch it all the time.
One thing we haven't talked about in this session with Jeff Silvertooth is the agriculture labor situation and how COVID-19 has affected the labor situation.
Oh, that's huge. That's a good question, too. You know, last 2 weeks ago, we had an Arizona Agribusiness Water Council conference. And there were several people.
Telephonically or
it was,
Zooming?
It was done virtually, yeah.
Okay.
But it was
like everything else.
Yeah,
right?
But it was well done. It was okay. Excellent. And it was a bunch of folks from industry.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way from the production, the regulatory side, as well as people that are working with labor provisions. Almost everyone, I would say, gosh, Bill, probably 70% of them commented on some of the biggest issues they're dealing with or is associated with labor and the impacts from COVID. That was the theme. Has COVID-19 impacted
yes.
your agriculture production? The labor issue is huge. And you've seen some of the reports that have come out of California recently. But the labor companies that are working with the individuals that are coming in to work in the fields have been doing all they can to try to protect the workers. But they deal with the same thing that we do, like where I work at the university. You can take all the precautions, like in the buses and in the fields, and people mm-hmm. follow them with the mask and mm-hmm. cleansing and space social mm-hmm. distancing and the spacing. They've done all of that, but it's how people behave on their own. So you can do all
yeah,
you can.
You can't monitor people 24/7
right.
and see what their habits
that's
are and
it.
What they're doing off
that's
off
right.
campus
that,
or
that's
yeah.
That's always the case.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a matter of people getting new habits and developing a new culture.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the biggest problems they've had. So they don't want to get sick and they don't want to be mm-hmm. around somebody else that has. So they want the precautions, but just getting people educated and getting us to change our habits a little bit, just like you and I were talking about
right.
when we came in here today,
right.
you know, the way we do things in the studio today.
Yes.
Same thing there.
We have plexiglass in front of you here in
yep.
the studio. This is your first visit to the studio since all this craziness began, and as you can see, we take all sorts of precautions
right.
here, which is good.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
It's
yeah.
good. So I wonder, when you have that shortage of labor, and does that translate into the consumer paying more for product?
It probably very well could, and it could also translate to supply, which would translate then to price. And that's a distinct possibility. And we're just now starting the produce season in Yuma. And they're planting right now. The harvest won't actually begin until about October, maybe November. So we're going to see pretty quickly. But I will tell you, just from that conference 2 weeks ago and from my interactions with folks in the industry the past several months, that's a huge concern. Can we maintain the labor supplies, the labor provisions? And another thing that's been happening is the laws and the regulations at the border. And it's been increasingly difficult to get people across the border, and so they can work. The fact of the matter is we're in a partnership with Mexico in our own production.
Sure.
They provide most of the labor, and you just can't get people here in the United States to do that. That's just a fact.
With all the restrictions at the border, that's got to create problems.
Both those two things together, the COVID restrictions and then just legal restrictions at the border, it's a real concern in agriculture today out here.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Contributor on Agriculture, professor at the University of Arizona. We will let Jeff get back to the University of Arizona and the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Kind of a strange environment over there, isn't it, nowadays, Jeff?
Yeah, it's different. In my 34 seasons here in Arizona, I'd say there's nothing I've seen like it.
But all right, we're going to take
we'll
our
make it.
Thank you. Good to see
you,
Jeff.
Thank you, sir. You too.
We'll take our break right here. It's the Buckmaster Show, the Midway Point, CBS Radio News. An update coming up in about 6 seconds. Back with you. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I want to speak a few moments about one of our great sponsors, Green Things. So many of you go there. I know you love it, and I can see why. 3384 East River Road, it's a place that is easy to fall in love with. Their 13-acre site has everything imaginable for your garden. And they also have Zocalo, which is really has some beautiful merchandise. Much of it is handcrafted from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Here are a couple of websites for you to find out more. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com for more information. We're going to continue right now with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series, doing our best to introduce our listeners to as many candidates on the ballot as possible. It's not possible to interview all of them, so what we've done is we've kind of pooled our resources. We have three local daily talk shows here. We have Wake Up Tucson, then we have Zach's Yenser's Tipping Point program, then my program. So between the three shows, we're trying to hit on all the candidates, and then we take the interviews and we pool them and have them available for listeners to go to KVOI.com to hear the interview. Right now, we turn to the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. There are three open seats. This is a very unusual situation. Three open seats on a five-member board. There are six candidates. One of them is Natalie Luna Rose. Natalie, how are you?
Good. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. Why did you decide? First of all, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and why you're running?
Okay. Well, I am a Tucson native, born and raised. Went through the TUSD system, graduate of Rincon High School. I'm married. I have a daughter who is attending Alice Vale Middle School. And I'm running as a parent who wants to have parents' voices on the board.
What do you, how would you grade what TUSD, how they are reacting, this current board, to the COVID situation? What would you do different?
Well, I actually, I think they're doing well in the circumstances that they are given. What I would like to see the board do a little bit more, though, is be a little bit more proactive with their communication before the school year started. You know, parents didn't really know a lot of what time their child's school was to start, and some of the login information. And we got those details like, you know, two nights before school started. So there's that. And I know that the teachers in Tucson Unified are waiting to hear from the administration on whether or not a hybrid situation will be happening. And I know that the board recently voted to talk about that on October 6th. They started discussions last Tuesday. So I think a little bit more communication, but I think overall, at least for my family, the remote learning has been going well. But I know that it's difficult for a lot of other families across Tucson.
Talk a little bit about what's on your platform, Natalie, what you would like to see this board be doing. And it's going to be a big change. This is the first time in really decades, generations, that we've had this many open seats.
Yeah. My platform is simple. I think TUSD arguably has had its moments, and it's made things difficult. But I think to have a parent voice like mine on the board would allow for more communication. I have a communications background. There's a lot of really great programs that the district has that I would like to see highlighted more. We focus on the negative, and Bill, we're living in a time right now where there's just so many angry voices. I'd really like to try to start changing that dialogue and turning it around into something positive, not ignoring the issues of you know, budget. The district can, you know, I'd like to see the district perhaps pare down the budget to make it more understandable, because a $550 million budget is that's a daunting task. And unless you're a CPA, if you're just, you know, Tucson taxpayer, it can be hard to decipher sometimes, some days. So I'd like to do something where maybe there's a monthly meeting that helps break down the budget. There's, you know, those type of transparency items. But I'd really like to try to also focus, like I said, on the positive of the district, because we've got some great teachers and staff and people who are really working hard right now, especially during this time. And to have a strong parent voice to champion those things, but also to be on the administration to make sure that we're doing things right.
Tucson Unified gets a really bad rap, doesn't it, in many cases where people just assume it's a really low-end kind of district where kids are not going to get a good education. There's a real messaging problem, isn't there, Natalie?
There is. And I'd like to, you know, say if I didn't believe in TUSD and public education, I wouldn't be talking to you on the radio today. So I graduated from Rincon High School. I went through the whole system K-12. I don't really consider myself a failure, and I think that could be said for many of my friends that went through the system with me and other people that did across the city and have moved on to doing really good things. And my daughter and her friends, my daughter's in the GATE program, which is the Gifted and Talented Education, wonderful program that I think a lot of people still don't know about. And those kids, you know, they tend to go into UHS, which has had high marks for many years. There's OMA, there's Opening Music Through the Arts. There's just a lot of the dual language. There's just a lot of programs and the things. Rincon's got a great band program. So people don't hear that, though. They hear the previous infighting on the previous boards. The DSEG case, mismanagement of funds from years ago, and those things have stuck around. And I think if we're just trying to be, I'm just really trying to be looking at the positive, especially right now. I think that's what we need more of. And again, just want to say not to neglect the issues that are happening, but you start with those small things, Bill, then you can really start, I think, gaining traction on how the district is perceived, and maybe help bringing back the families that moved on to other school districts or charter schools, and maybe they're not happy there and want to give TUSD a second chance.
Where would folks get more about you? I'm sure you've got a website you would like to have folks check out, direct our listeners to.
Yes. So I am, it's Natalie for TUSD, all one word, N-A-T-A-L-I-E. FORTUSD .com. I'm also on Facebook, Natalie for TUSD, as well as Instagram and Twitter, all under Natalie for TUSD.
It's been a challenge campaigning in these times, I'm sure.
Yes, it has. I'm not a stranger on helping and volunteering on other people's campaigns, but to do one my own through COVID. This morning, I went and walked with a couple other candidates. This morning, walked 150 doors near Santa Rita High School, and we're just no contact lit dropping. We've got everybody's lit, and we've got a list, and not knocking on doors, but sliding it in on their porches, and hopefully getting the word out. But it's that, and it's a lot of social media and phone calls, and phone calls are difficult now too, because everybody's getting inundated by them, and a lot of people don't answer their phones anymore. They'll go straight to voicemail, and I don't know if they listen to their voicemail, because everybody, you know, texting is is the way to go.
Very strange times. Natalie Luna Rose. Thank you, Natalie. Good checking in with you.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Natalie Luna Rose, one of six candidates for three open board seats on the TUSD governing board. And again, all of our candidate interviews archived. We put them all together in one place from our three daily radio shows at kvoi.com. And we have another candidate interview coming up next, Tiffany Shedd for Congress, and Tiffany is facing off against Congressman Tom O'Halloran in that sprawling congressional district number one. We'll talk to Tiffany right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's time to start planning to visit Silver City. It's just a three-hour drive from Tucson. If you start your planning now, you'll be all ready to jump in the car and take off for New Mexico once New Mexico gives the green light that they're ready to welcome, once again, out-of-state visitors. For more information on Silver City and Grant County, places to stay and things to do, please visit southwestnewmexico.org. And we continue now with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. We now turn our attention to the congressional district number one, that sprawling district here in Arizona. The district is currently represented by Democrat Tom O'Halloran. Tiffany Shedd, Republican, is challenging Mr. O'Halloran in the November election. And Tiffany joins us now on the Buckmaster Show Live Line, which is presented, by the way, by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tiffany, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Tell me a little bit about your candidacy and why you decided to run.
Well, I decided to run because this was not part of my grand plan in life, but I lived in the district the majority of my life, and my family, me, my neighbors have faced, you know, we've got some big challenges in CD1. We've felt those challenges, and I've tried to work on things at a local level, and just felt like we didn't have good representation and wanted to actually try to solve problems that people in Arizona 1 are facing. And you asked background, too. So my background is I grew up here, went to the University of Arizona, have a degree in elementary education, taught English as a second language, kindergarten for a bit, went to law school at the U of A. So bear down, go Wildcats out there, since this is a Tucson station, it's friendly country. And, after graduating law school, have worked on water, agribusiness, natural resource issues. I've been married to my husband 30 years, and he's a fourth-generation farmer, so I've been farming for 30 years. We also own a couple more small businesses unrelated to farming. We have a car wash and some other things like that. And we have three kids, and my husband's also Muscogee Creek from Oklahoma, and so my kids are Native American, and the reason that's important is they actually use the same Indian health services that many members of my district or people that live here use, and so I feel like you have an understanding of some of the tribal issues as well, having lived those.
We're speaking with Tiffany Shedd, who is running for Congress in CD1. Tiffany, you ran 2 years ago, right?
I did.
What did you learn in that particular run that is helping you this time around?
Well, I've learned a lot. first of all, a lot. And first of all, I underestimated the amount of resources it takes to reach voters in a district like this. So we have taken a lot of time building those resources, and the National Republican Party is helping me get the message out. Just learned, it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose, but I don't know that there's a school on how to run for Congress. And so it's just like anything, you just learn a lot of how the ropes are. I mean, no one taught me how to, own a car wash or raise kids but you kind of got to get your feet wet. And so at the time, I wasn't too happy that I didn't make it through the primary, but now that I look back, it was a great education. And so, it set us up to win the primary and I believe in a very good position to win the general.
That name recognition, I would think, would help the second time around.
Oh, it helps a lot. I think we spent about $600,000 on name recognition and did an incredible amount of events and traveling in 2018. It's been a bit less in this cycle because of, the state being shut down and COVID and people not feeling comfortable to come to events. But even still, we've done hundreds. So, very helpful.
Articulate for us your platform. Basically, what's at the top of the list?
The first thing is economy and jobs. I have spent my life as a small business owner, and we need to make sure that we have tax policy that doesn't overburden small businesses or large businesses, and that people get to keep more of their hard-earned money. We also live in an era of increasing regulations that really don't serve a purpose, and the regulations plus the taxes strangle job creators, they hurt the economy. And I'm really worried right now when I see the Democrat platform of more taxes, more regulations, and more shutdowns, that many of our businesses in Arizona 1 can't survive another round of that. And so we need to do what we can to get government out of the way and let Americans do. I have faith in the American people to do what they do best, and that's build, create, invent. And we need to get government out of the way so that they can do that and recover.
I'm sure you're putting a lot of miles on your car, right? It's a huge district.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. I think it's 9 hours from Page to Casa Grande last time I drove it.
Goodness.
and that's not to the bottom of the district in Casa Grande. It still goes to, as you know, Oro Valley, Marana, Graham, Greenlee. And so, yeah, I believe it's a 9-hour drive to Page.
And you have such different kind of constituencies in that district. It's a wide variety of folks that do a lot of different things.
That's true, and you can look at it that way, but there is also a lot of similarities in the communities and the people. We have a lot of great small communities, and even our ones that we consider larger, like Marana, Casa Grande, Maricopa, Flagstaff, still have that small community feel to them. And the one thing you hear up and down is we need, they want economic growth. They need the infrastructure to have economic growth. And, you know, they're not having anyone advocating for that in a meaningful way that actually delivers. And that goes from, you know, the reservations to, you know, private land on down. We have a lot of natural resource issues that are, frankly, all connected. Wildfires in the north affect water quality in the south. You know, land is connected. And so, you know, the district is built of a lot of really good, hardworking people that, you know, just want the best for their family and be able to put food on the plate, have enough for retirement, et cetera. And so our similarities are a lot more than our differences.
Speaking with Tiffany Shedd, who is running for Congress against the incumbent, Tom O'Halloran, is there something specifically about Mr. O'Halloran that you would like to kind of bring to the forefront?
Absolutely. So right now, Tom O'Halloran is voting 97% of the time with Nancy Pelosi, and this is from ProPublica, which is a neutral website. I don't think that she really understands the needs of Arizona One. He has voted against the Trump tax cuts, but just voted for tax cuts, the SALT exemption, which benefits California millionaires. Another thing is he apparently thinks I had a congressional vote by the ads. I've never held office, so didn't have a vote. I am absolutely for shoring up Social Security, pre-existing conditions. I'm a cancer survivor. I have a type 1 diabetic daughter. Those are things that I'm absolutely for taking care of and making sure that people don't have to choose between bankruptcy and lack of care. And the other thing is constituent services. I mean, two offices in district and one out of district is not enough for people who, by the time a lot of times you go to the congressman's office, you're having a Social Security problem or a VA problem, you name it, and you're already kind of down and driving that many hours to an office in either Casa Grande or Flagstaff or out of district in Tucson isn't enough. We need more constituent offices, I think round 6, so that, you know, we can be the bridge between the federal government and the people here so that they have a voice and have their issues taken care of.
All right, Tiffany, we're going to put your interview up with all of our other interviews at KVOI.com. What about your website?
Oh, it's shedforcongress.com, and it's S-H-E-D-D. So like the building in your backyard, but fancy because it has two D's.
Tiffany,
it's a very glamorous name.
All right, Tiffany.
F-O-R.
Tiffany Shedd, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks
appreciate
a lot.
It.
Tiffany Shedd,
all right,
running for Congress. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, Tucson Police Chief Chris Magnus will be with me, and lots to talk about with the police chief tomorrow. Dave Ramsey's next on KVOI. Have a great afternoon.